It's an experience. That's what Christianity is. It's an experience. We all personally experience it, and we all personally experience it in a different way because we all have access with God. Our faith is special to us. Some people are open about it. Some people are closed about it. But if you really and truly accepted Christ in your life, you know that the resurrection is real, and you have that assurance of eternal life. That's why we can go and face, and just with Sharon, like with Sylvia and her family and so forth, and as hard as it is, we know that loved one is safely home with the Lord. And we have the promise of going to be with them also in one time, because we truly have that freshness, that youth spirit that is within us. There's a legend. I like legends. Some of them are good. Some of them ain't so good. But I like legends. And there's a real beautiful legend about a king who decided to set aside a special day to honor his greatest subjects. Well, the big day arrived, and there was a large gathering at the palace courtyard. There was four finalists in that group that was brought to before the king, and that the king would choose the winner. And this fellow that was organizing it for the king said, "Look, king, here is the first one. This young man here is very wealthy, and he's a philanthropist." And the king then was told about how this man deserved this honor because of his humanitarian efforts. "He'd given much of his wealth to the poor, king. We really feel as though he deserves it." The second person was also celebrated, and he was a physician, a doctor. The king was told that this doctor was highly deserving of the honor of the king because he had rendered faithful and dedicated service to the sick for many, many years. And the third one was a distinguished judge. The king was told, "This judge is worthy also because he, for his noted wisdom and his fairness and his brilliance in decisions." The fourth person was a very nice, petite woman, elderly. Everyone was quiet. They were surprised to see her there among the physician, the philanthropist, and all those among her. Wonder what she had to contribute. She hardly looked of someone who had be a part of being honored as the greatest subject in all of the kingdom. You wonder, what has she accomplished? There was something about her, though, that look of love in her face and the understanding in her eyes and her quiet confidence. And the king was intrigued, to say the least, maybe even somewhat puzzled by her presence. He said, "Who's this woman?" "Well, you see, king, the philanthropist, the doctor, and the judge, they're all here." And the king said, "Okay, well then, who is this woman?" "King, she was their teacher." "You see, the woman had no wealth, no fortune, no title, but she had unselfishly given herself to produce good people. I don't think there's anything more powerful or more Christ-like than sacrificial love." Teachers do that all the time. Parents do it all the time. The king could not see the value of this humble woman. He missed the significance of the teacher, and how often we miss the value of those around us. I think it would surprise us to know how often we miss the presence of Christ in our life, just as Cleopas and his brother missed the significance of the stranger that was walking with them on the road to Emmaus. It is likewise easy for us to miss the significance of the resurrection. So on the road to Emmaus, we find some answers. Don't miss the significance of the resurrection. I was listening to Jack Van Impe this morning, and there was one of their guests was on there and was talking about his ministry of creative science, science of creation, and how he travels the world and he finds that there are people who call themselves Christians that don't believe in the resurrection or hasn't claimed it. Well, without the resurrection, then our faith becomes just like any other dead sect. It is the principal thing of Christianity, the resurrection of Jesus Christ. So don't miss the resurrection, because it transforms us. And if we look closely at what happened to these two brothers as they journeyed from Jerusalem to their home city of Emmaus, 7 miles outside the city, a stranger, whom we now know was Jesus, joined them. And he asked them, "What are you talking about, guys?" And they stopped dead in their tracks. "What do you mean? What are we talking about? You don't know what's happened in these last couple days? Our friend, Jesus, teacher, master, rabbi, the one that we thought was going to be the mighty prophet to come and save Israel, was unjustly condemned to death, violently put to death on a cross." They say to their companion, "Are you the only person in all of Jerusalem who do not know what took place these past few days?" This would be enough to unsettle anyone, but new and disturbing information is being told. "Reports about his tomb," they said. "It's empty." These crazy notions. Women, though, they went and they said the tomb was empty, but we don't know what's going to happen next. And on that dusty road that day, Jesus begins to share with them the prophets of the Old Testament, Moses, and all the other prophets. And he opened the scriptures to them. And he was transforming their thinking, because they had no idea who he was. But they concluded that this notion of Jesus, he failed us. But now they understand this 3-day plan. Finally, when the two brothers invite Jesus at the end before Jesus was going to go on and they were going to go to their home, finally they said, "Jesus," well, they didn't know it was Jesus, "how about coming and having supper with us?" And again, Jesus transformed the event, just as they did at the Passover meal in the breaking of the bread. There at that ordinary dinner, at the end of the day, this stranger, as we know it was Jesus, he took and he broke bread and he blessed it. "Oh God, King of the universe, who brings forth the fruit of the wheat." And he broke it. And when he broke it, their eyes were opened. The transformation power of Christ in a simple ceremony of breaking the bread. There's a story about a young man by the name of Walter Elias. Born in the city, his parents one day decided they wanted to become farmers. And Walter had a vivid imagination, and he thought, well, it would be pretty cool to go and be on a farm. Perfect place for a young man. He was so excited. And one day he went out into the apple orchard, and he was amazed what he saw, and he looked around. This story about Walter reminds me of Callaway Gardens. If you ever go up there, they got a predator birds show, and these birds free fly. It's amazing. In fact, the one flew right in front of me and Judy. His talons touched the top of her head, and I was looking right full in his face. It was kind of eerie, but he didn't do it, and he went on. Anyhow, Walter was out here in the apple orchard, and there he saw this owl sitting up in the tree, just perfectly perched. Now, owls sleep during the day because they do their hunting at night. And he stood there, and he watched that owl. He thought about what his father had told him about owls and how they always would rest during the day and how they hunted at night, and this owl was asleep. And he also thought, hey, that would make a great pet. Being careful not to make any noise, he stepped over sticks and leaves, and the owl was still asleep, and he got up close to him. This owl never heard Walter coming. Finally, he was standing underneath the owl. He reached up and he grabbed the owl's legs. Well, you can imagine what happened afterwards. The events followed very difficult to explain, but suddenly everything was in chaos. The owl came to life, and Walter's thought about keeping the bird as a pet was quickly forgotten. The air was filled with wings and feathers and screaming and all the excitements. Walter held tighter to the legs in his panic. Walter then, still holding the owl, threw it to the ground, stomped it on it until it was dead. Then all things calmed down. Walter now looked at that dead owl, the bloody bird. He began to cry. He ran back to the farm, got a shovel, and he buried the owl in that orchard. At night, though, he would dream about that owl. And after years passed, he never got over what happened to him that summer day in that apple orchard. Deep down, it affected him for the rest of his life. And as he grew older, he said, "I will never, ever kill anything again." You see what happens sometimes? Something significant, an event, will transform people and redeem them from despair. And something was resurrected in his life. Something made that young man by the name of Walter Elias Disney to give life to thousands of animals on the screen. You see, that resurrection changes everything. It transforms us and it moves us from despair to the possibilities of life and how we can have life more abundantly. It takes our blindness and opens our eyes. It transforms ordinary bread into a holy meal. It takes two sad and lost brothers on the road to Emmaus who had only thought that their world was lost, knew, and they gave it back to him in the breaking of the bread. Jesus came to them and says, "See, I am not dead. I'm alive. Now go and tell the world." On the road to Emmaus, as we traveled home, don't miss the significance of the resurrection. We can be transformed and secondly be convinced. In verse 32 of Luke 24, the brothers realized that the risen Lord who was with them, but then he vanished while he was talking to them. Isn't that true in life? We usually don't understand what's happening around us until we change. Then we look back and we see the conviction of our hearts. You know who does the conviction of our hearts is the Holy Spirit. One of the greatest voices in all of church history, and I love church history. I love history in general, but especially church history. This young man that I had one time mispronounced his name when I was given a message, and I had a retired Baptist preacher in the congregation, and instead of saying Augustine, I said Constantine. It just came out wrong. He stood right up in the middle of the congregation and he corrected me, which was okay. It wasn't really the place to do it, but I misspoke. So I don't want to misspeak today. St. Augustine lived between the 4th and the 5th century in Rome, and he was a bishop. After Rome had faded into the dust, and largely Augustine's writings that kept Christianity alive, it made the most influential movement of the world ever known was his writings. And it was remarkable then between the 8th and the 12th century, his writings were more widely read than any other. And that was 400 to 700 years after his death. But he was not always a saint. Before he was converted at age 29, he lived to fulfill every lust that anyone can imagine. That's what his dream to doing, and that's what he was doing, and that's what he did. But Augustine had one great quality that saved his pitiful life: a praying mother. We got Mother's Day coming up pretty soon. How many know that we have a praying mother on our side that's helped us a lot all through life? Oh yeah, there's some mothers that are maybe a little bit better than others, but mothers are special. They are special. And Augustine had one of those special mothers that prayed for him. It was a quality that saved him from all bunch of stuff. She never gave up on him until one day he stopped long enough to listen to the voices around him. Augustine had just heard a sermon by St. Ambrose, the Bishop of Milan. And we are told in public speaking classes, too, that, and I'm guilty of this, that we should not read long quotes. And since I've been guilty of it before, I'd like to be guilty of it again. I want to share two paragraphs from St. Augustine's writings. He says, "One day, under deep conviction, I cast myself down, I know not how, under a certain fig tree, giving full vent to my tears, and floods of mine eyes gushed out. So I was weeping in the most bitter contrition of my heart, when lo, I heard a neighboring house voice. As a boy or girl, I know not, chanting and oft repeating, 'Take up and read, take up and read.' And instantly my countenance altered, and I began to think most intently whether children were wont in any kind of play to sing such words, could I not remember I ever heard anything like that? So checking my torrent of tears, I arose and interpreting to be no other than a command from God to open the book and read the first chapter I find. Eagerly then, I returned to the place where Alabas, his friend, was sitting, and there I had laid the volume of the apostle. I opened it, and I seized in silence, and I read the section on which my eyes fell. Not in rioting or drunkenness, not in chambering or wantonness, not in strife or envy. Put on the Lord Jesus Christ and make no provisions for the flesh. No further would I read, nor indeed, for instantly at the end of the sentence, my light, as if it was serenely infused into my heart, and all the darkness of doubt vanished away. That's what happened to me. I no longer have to look over my shoulder because of my past and things that I've done, because I received the grace and the love of Christ from that resurrected power. You see, convictions don't always lead us to conversion, though. The transformation cannot happen unless we are first convicted. Nobody has to tap on your shoulder and tell you you're doing something wrong when you know you're doing something wrong. And we give our credit to our conscience sometimes, but that conscience is God's Spirit's. We may not recognize that conviction, but on that road to Emmaus, don't miss the significance of the resurrection, because it convicts us. And that conviction can change us as the world around us. And then finally, don't miss the significance of the resurrection, because it makes us witnesses. And this is perhaps the area that a lot of us fail. And you're not alone. If you have never spoken to another person about the death, the burial, and the resurrection of Jesus Christ and the hope that it brings, you need to do it. Very few people live a life like Billy Graham. I like to watch some of the Billy Graham's classics on Christian television, and it's just amazing. He, too, is 90-plus now. I don't know how old he is now. But I recently read that Billy Graham had preached the gospel to more than any live audiences than anybody in history. Probably over 210 million people heard the message proclaimed by Billy Graham in 185 countries or territories around the world. You can't measure the number of the effects that it had by one man on so many people. To try to calculate the homes that was kept intact, marriages saved, children spiritually given mature fathers, the young saved from drugs and thousands of other influences that Billy Graham had had, you cannot put it all into context of how many lives were changed. The significance, even his own son, was changed by Billy's ministry. He was an outcast. He wanted nothing to do with this Christian stuff. Now, Franklin Graham not only runs the Billy Graham Association, he also has his other ministry, as we come to know, Samaritan's Purse. There is no laboratory, there's no library that can count the impact of the resurrection upon the history of this world. And you can take the resurrection out of the gospel, and what happens? The house of cards of Christianity fall to the ground. As I said, we would just be another dead sect. The Apostle Paul recognized this when he wrote to the church at Corinth. Some were saying that the resurrection never happened. And Paul made it clear. He said, if Christ had not been raised, then your faith is in vain, and the gospel has nothing but a charade. Bethel United Methodist Church, I want to proclaim to you this day that Christ indeed has risen from the dead. So at the end of the story, the two brothers do what is only natural. They get up. They walk back to Jerusalem and they tell the disciples what they have seen. That's being a witness. Telling your friends what you have seen. Telling your friends the transformation in your own life. Plant a seed of hope. You know, your personal testimony is yours. Nobody can challenge it because you know. And sometimes that's all you have to do is just share. Because you have credibility, especially with family and friends. I know my family says, I know what you were like, buddy. I know God must have touched you because, well, anyhow, another story for another day. It's the power, the witness of disciples, the power behind those two brothers on that road to Emmaus. It was the power of the Apostle Paul who brought the gospel to Rome. It was the power of St. Augustine, the power of Billy Graham, and the many other evangelists over the period of years. On that road home, don't miss the power of the resurrection, because it can transform. It can make you a witness for God.